Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here this evening. Tonight, we are going to be talking about how do you make sense of life when you're living in chaos? You almost feel like you're spinning like a top. You have no ground. You have nothing below you. You have no sense of values or morals. And it seems like your habits just seem to be coming out of the air, and you hold on to them as if they are part of you. How do you be able to find yourself going through life? Are you following along with society? Are you turning around and being a little clone of social media? I had even said to an acquaintance the other day, they keep watching a lot of these particular shows on television. I said, oh my gosh, you're listening to your cult shows. And they're like, what? And I said, is there something within you that you could follow your heart and your soul and know that it is so much greater than society, what's put out there, materialism, and all these other things that we think is our identity, ourself, who we are? Maybe we are so much more than that, but are we afraid to shed all of that? Today, my guest is Tobin Crenshaw. His book is The Beautiful Lie, Finding Faith in a World Gone Mad. Tobin, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you, Dr. Jeanette. Very glad to be here.
Oh, you're so welcome. Don't you think, Tobin, sometimes people say, I don't know what is up, I don't know what is down. Man, here's my leash. Just keep on taking me along, right?
Absolutely.
You know, I think sometimes we say, which generation are you in? I know you're of a younger generation. I'm in my 60s. And a lot of times in my generations, we were pretty much pushed. This is where you're going to go. Here's your template. Drop into it. All you need to do is learn how to read, and you can make yourself the greatest thing you ever need to be. And I know now in your generations, you're saying, what is the world that I came into, and how does it look so chaotic and so spinning around? Can I make sense of it? Don't you think?
I do. I'm actually Generation X, so that term basically was given because they didn't know what label to put on this generation. They kind of thought they were kind of the lost group of people with no real direction. So absolutely understand that very well.
Right. It's almost like, you know, when you don't know how to write, you put an X for your name. Isn't that something else?
It is. Absolutely. Sure.
Wow. Well, Tobin, what do you think is the greatest thing right now that people are finding? I find that they're almost like at a wall and they don't know which way to go, left, right, or through, when really what we're saying is the way is up. Start looking up. Where did you come from? Who are you? Don't you think?
I agree. Tremendous confusion, I think, that a lot of people have, trying to figure out what the real meaning of life is. A lot of distractions that we have readily available, social media, everything just 24/7, just there to kind of lead us to just kind of satiate ourselves so we don't really seek the deeper answers, because I think people are just so confused about where to find true answers.
I think you came in as a generation when people were shedding the religion. You know, religion is a building. Religion is what you were taught in school, and it's what you're supposed to follow. In other words, it's almost like a slap on the wrist kind of dogma. When really now you came in where people are shedding the religion, churches are closing, you no longer go to CCD classes on Sunday, you know. And it turns out that what are people really moving away from? Is it the God they believe they are, or is there still a God over us? Yes?
Oh, sure, absolutely. I think there is a tremendous discomfort and unrest with traditional answers, and I think people question maybe what their parents believe and grandparents believe because maybe they see their parents and grandparents not living up to ideals they said they had, and I think a lot of people don't live lives where they really have true joy and happiness, and people see that and question, if it didn't work for you, then perhaps I should consider other answers.
Do you think that everybody is supposed to be in perfection? In other words, kids will say, well, you did this, and you did that, and you did that, when really, isn't that the path of life to have challenges and to see how you're still standing?
Absolutely. I think Tony Robbins said it well. He said the biggest problem people have is believing they shouldn't have problems. Problems are where we grow, where we learn things about ourselves. They help shape us and test us. And we try to avoid things often that challenge us. But really, that's the place where you can learn the biggest lessons.
You know, when clients come to me and they've got something, I say, fantastic, absolutely fantastic. I'm so thrilled you found it. It's sort of like you've been seeking for so long to find out what's wrong with you. And it could be either a mental health diagnosis, or it could be cancer, or it could be finally you get a divorce. I'll say, isn't that fabulous? Because for the past 2 decades, you've been mushing around with it, and you were kind of seeking it. You didn't know what it was, and now you had a name on it. Well, now you get, what are you going to do with the name, right?
I absolutely agree that coming up with the label for something gives you something now you can recognize that you can overcome that, for sure, absolutely.
Can you tell us a little bit about your work?
I was a pastor for 10 years, and after about 10 years, just saw things that I thought were distasteful in other pastors, other leaders I worked with. Right. So I kind of stepped away from that role and got into criminal justice. I had some background in that. I was a military police in the Marine Corps for a while. And after about 5 years in the criminal justice field, I continue that work today. But after about 5 years, some events took place that kind of challenged easy answers for me. So I started a deeper study about spiritual truth. And I continue now, after 5 years away, I've come back to being a pastor, but it's not something I do where I'm getting a full-time salary, things like that. I do it committing my time to it because it's something I want to give to people and continue working in the criminal justice field with men and women in prison, trying to help them find solutions and help our culture to overcome some of the challenges that people in the criminal justice field face.
It's almost like when you were doing the pastor work, people believed everybody would be saved. Only the rich came to church because they had money to put in the penance box, you know. The other people kind of sat in the back and they hid back, you know. And then you decided, is religion really all about money? Is it about power? Or is it about this great thing in the world? And then when you look at when you flipped over and now you're helping those in jail, it's almost like, well, now I'm really studying, is the human soul worth saving? And the answer is absolutely yes. So really, you saw what a soul was, and now you can see how you can work to be able to bring them back round circle, don't you think?
Absolutely. When you see people facing, you know, ultimate challenges and ultimate pain, able to overcome that, have a fresh start, begin again, find healing in the midst of some of the biggest challenges, you realize that, you know, God's grace is there to help each of us, no matter how far we might have fallen in life or how far we've gotten off course.
Well, Tobin, in your book again, the book is The Beautiful Lie, you also talk right at the beginning about a life worth living. And you know what? I think that's very important to talk about that for a second, because people say, my life is not worth living because I don't have a house, a car, a job, kids, I don't have perfect clothes, and I don't have money in the bank. You know, it's almost as if that is that the picture of a worthy life, a life worth living, that seems to be always in people's minds, and it's almost like if I'm not plugged into all of those circuits, I'm not going to be able to dance to the music kind of idea. Don't you think that's what sets people up to say, I'm not worthy, I'm missing something, or it's I have shame or guilt because I am not dancing with that? What are your thoughts on that?
Yes, I think comparison is one of the biggest causes of pain, people always comparing themselves to others, or maybe criticisms they received as a child and not still feeling like they've gained acceptance from trying to overcome things that maybe parents said to them or someone in authority said to them. But studies are very clear. It's hard for people, I think, to logically grasp it until maybe they've experienced it on their own. But studies are very clear that material things really don't move anybody's level of happiness. They study people that have gone through these wonderful moments that everybody dreams of, you know, win the lottery. But when they visit those people a year later, that happiness they got from that, they're not any happier than when they didn't have that money. Right. Then they look at people in ultimate pain, that biggest fear people list when they list what are they most afraid of. They talk about being paralyzed, and they study people that found themselves paralyzed and they thought, I'll never smile again. But what they find, they come back a year later, those people that had that ultimate pain are very satisfied and happy in life. They've overcome that. So it's not circumstances, it's not material things, it's who we become day to day, living with a purpose so there's no regret in our life, and trying to just expand our own giving to others, and just seeking to be more loving so that we can give that to others.
Because it's really not about our reflection in life with our outward whatever it is. It's truly about our inner soul and what we're reflecting outward from the inner side, don't you think? So many times people say, well, what does that really mean? And it's almost like, can you just say, hello, I'm here, that's it, and to someone, irregardless. It's almost like if you could go into a big arena and there's all of these people in there and you have no idea what they're doing there or anything, and everybody closes their eyes, and all of a sudden you just walk up to someone with your eyes closed and you say, hello, I'm here. Can you imagine that connection without all of those labels?
Yeah, absolutely. It's being able to live from your heart. Other people live from their heart. Whether somebody uses the term their higher self or their spiritual self, all these ways that we describe the same thing. When somebody's in tune spiritually, when they're listening to that higher consciousness, they, you know, all those things that we fear about rejection and acceptance, they just kind of vanish, and we just are there in the moment. And when you have somebody else experience that, it's, you know, it's perfect peace.
You know, I have the dream all the time. You know, I was a dental hygienist for 25 years and in many different offices, and it pretty much was whatever presented in your chair was what you were going to dance with that day. And it was from, you know, I mean, with you, when you look at teeth, you're going, wow, man, I'm just going from these perfect pearly whites, you know, that like reflect off the TV, to people that can barely even have one or two teeth to be able to eat to nourish themselves. So really, I pretty much grew up with no judgment. It's just always been that way, and I've noted that. But I think sometimes when people say, who is controlling my bus and who is the one that's driving me to do what I do or think what I think? What do you think about that? Because a lot of times, I mean, in your work, you have a lot of people who say, you know, they made me do it. I had to do it. It was because I did that, blah, blah, blah. What do you think about that?
I think that emotional mastery is one of the keys to real fulfillment for anybody's life. And so I see people all the time, whether it's in the prison or just people I counsel, that they feel like their emotions are out of control and somebody else made them angry or upset. And some people upset about something that happened, you know, many years ago. Mm-hmm. But being able to recognize that, you know, emotions don't so much happen to us, but that we do the emotions by the things that we're focusing on. If there's a lack of gratitude, if we're saying things to ourselves about very negative words, picturing just terrible things, and just using our physical body in a way that is tense and stressed, that's what's bringing about that sense of that unrest or that anger. When people do what they call breathe through your heart, where you just kind of take a couple minutes and you put your hand on your heart, breathe a little slower than normal, and just come up with three things that you're grateful for. You know, studies show that in that moment that the brain waves, the heart waves, they go in sync. Somebody that's frustrated, those waves are out of sync. But you can bring them in sync by just focusing on your hearts and your breath, something you're grateful for. And then that person, they experience no peace and joy, because you can't be angry when your heart wave and brain wave are in sync. So we can control that. So it's very important to learn things like heart math, emotional mastery, so these outward things don't have such an impact on us when things don't go the way we thought they should.
How about the comment of saying about you have a common life or an uncommon life? A common life to me sometimes seems to be as a silo existence. An uncommon life to me appears as those who are having experiences either up, down, left, or right, doesn't matter where along the paradigm, and either they are on a soul journey, they are learning something, they are going to God, they are leaving God, they are saying, I'm human, I'm in control, and I'm perfection. So in other words, an uncommon life is really about dancing with everything that's presenting in front of you. In other words, making sense of some of the chaos and being able to engage it and then knock it off the list. Versus a very common life is saying, I'm going to stay in my little glass house and I'm going to ignore, not pay attention to those other things out there because they are not, quote, mine. But then you end up, have you really engaged in life and experienced what might be out there for you? Don't you think those are two totally different banks?
I do. Actually, I use that term a lot, the uncommon life. I think it's very important to do things that make us uncomfortable and do things that maybe we're afraid of. And people kind of find that common life where they sort of just go through the motions. They don't have real passion. They're not very excited. But it's a safe place to be. Stepping out with risk is frightening because if you step out, you might be rejected. And people think if I'm going to be rejected, then I'm not worthy. If they're not worthy, they fear that they'll lose love. But everybody's looking for those people that will take the chance to be that example. That's why we love to watch like the Olympics. It's people doing things that are amazing to watch. But in watching something like that, we all know deep in our own hearts, you know what, they're an example of something that could raise each of our standards to try harder and live that uncommon life. But it takes overcoming that fear of what other people might say. It's like the old analogy, if you put crabs in a bucket and one tries to crawl out, the others actually pull it back in, you know, and that's happens in our culture because people, while they admire people that succeed, it also threatens them because they're fearful of looking at themselves. But we still have to be able to say, you know what, if I can be the example, live that uncommon life, I can help some other people elevate themselves as well.
It's just like quantum physics. Once you see something and you are aware of it, your perception of it, it has now become a reality. So really, in a way, if you've created this soft spot for yourself and you've put around all of these warriors around you that are now invested in keeping you in that place, because, see, if they see you as something else, then their perception is threatened. If they see you as similar, then their perception is validated. And, I mean, that pretty much shakes everybody's timbers. They're like, they're going to tell my secrets, they're going to do this, they're going to do that to me, when in essence it's really they're doing it to themselves, but you're perceiving it as a threat because you can see otherwise. Don't you think?
100%, absolutely. And it's the challenge for a lot of people to understand that sometimes families, you know, they were maybe doing the best they could with what they knew at the time, but often we learn in families, you know, not to step out too much. You know, you might get criticized or told, you know, if you do that, you'll fail. So we kind of carry some of those thoughts with us as we move along. But again, becoming that uncommon person is becoming conscious to stop and say, you know, these thoughts that I have or this fear of rejection, is that really me? And since it's not me, I can just move beyond that and step out and start living the life that is there for me to live on the path of that growth and serving other people and pursuing dreams. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who did the studies on death, you know, she had a fascinating statement she made when she was asked, you know, what do people really say at the end of life? And, you know, she said very clearly to live with no regrets. and to leave no unfinished business. And so she tried to live her life from that standpoint, leave no unfinished business, because, you know, we don't want to have anything that we regret when our life comes to a close. We want to be able to say, you know what, I lived it fully.
Right. Let's talk for a second about the idea of God puts things in our path, and I think the biggest lesson of life is what is faith, and how can we proceed along to be in awareness of faith in the first place? Faith is truly, faith equals the unknown. Faith equals being guided. Faith equals the opposite end of risk for many people. Don't you think that when we say faith, they would say, oh, but I took a risk, and say, oh, that great. Then what that means is you leaped into faith. You jumped into it. It just had a different name or a different color of drag for the day. But great, a risk was a faith being a guide. Don't you think sometimes we say we're so scared of the words that are on things that maybe we should just close our eyes and just leap?
Oh, absolutely. I think that if you're afraid you can't, then you must. If it's something you say you can't do, then that's the thing you need to focus on doing, because, you know, courage is there to help us push through that moment, but faith is there to help us say, you know what, there is no real failure in life. There's just lessons learned, and faith says, you know what, I'm not in this alone. God is there to help guide me, give me the strength, and so to take those steps, risk, and move forward, realizing again that the lessons are there to learn, whether by other people's definition we succeed or fail. The reality is there's no real failure as long as we're learning something in the process, and part of the process is to learn that we can do more things than we believed we could, but also to recognize that we're never alone.
Yes, and you know how you have a chapter in your book, Grace is Greater, and you know, I had written on the side of the pages, grace is allowing the grass between the trees. Sometimes people say, I'm looking for this big thing in my life I have to hang my hat on. You know, that would be a tree. And can you just be in the grass and be in a creative mode, or in a space that you just need to rest? Or maybe that's just where you need to come into awareness. Don't you think sometimes we diss those times and we have to feel like we have to keep grabbing and grabbing for something to raise us up?
I think that it's important every day to spend time and get quiet, whether it's, you know, 5 minutes or 10 minutes, and just be there in the moment. Something I learned from Tony Robbins as well is, you know, just asking great questions for a few moments every day. Just, what am I grateful for? Who do I love? Who loves me? And then even in the moment, say, what do I appreciate that I can see, hear, feel right now in this place? And it might just be, you know, a gentle breeze or sunlight on your face. But yes, I believe when you can really be in that moment and just grateful for the breath of life, all the need for all these other things, they lessen and lessen and lessen. And we can just appreciate here being now.
You know, when I think about it, we say, what happens when the legs come off the table? It's sort of like we see someone who says, oh, thank you, God, for my diploma. I am now an attorney. I can go out and help save people. And God will say, okay, cool, you've gotten the education. Now we're going to, let's say in the next 2 years, they lose their license. They aren't able to do it. Something happens. They lose maybe their house or whatever, or all of their school loans come due or something. And they say, well, but God, you wanted me to be a lawyer. What is wrong? And you were happy. You celebrated with me. And then maybe God could turn around and say, absolutely, I wanted you to learn how things are right or wrong, how things people work in. And now I'd like to show you how it feels to be able to end up in jail. Or maybe now it feels to be able to commit a crime. Or maybe now it feels that you don't have all of those higher up things that you believed that you needed all the time. So in other words, our lifetime, is it a straight up line? Or can be up and down and up and down, and they all mesh together?
Absolutely. I think people, I think that personal growth and spiritual growth is just kind of a straight line that, you know, it elevates, but rather it's the up and down. It's, you know, it's backwards sometimes and it goes forward. The process is just to help us to come to a place where we can recognize the unconditional love of God. And maybe that's going to be for somebody, they have to lose all those things of comfort, where they have the perfect job and perfect salary, and maybe they lose all that and come to a place where they suddenly are fearful, but realize in that place that unconditional love is still there just as much for them, because it's not about the performance that we do. It's not about trying to earn things. It's just recognizing that perfect love is always there.
You know, it's interesting. I work a lot with physicians who are on their burnt out path now. You see that a lot on social media. Physicians are burnt out. And I'll say, isn't that fantastic? I have one now. He's an intern, and he's just getting ready to finish all of his, you know, 9 years of medical practice. And he said, I don't know, you know, what to do. I said, isn't that great? You were supposed to get all that education. Now you're going to take all that education, and now let's see what you're going to create next. And he's like, well, I have to go work at the hospital. And I'll say, because that's the path that was created. Or is that the path you are creating? Don't you think we do have freedom of choice to create our own path, and we can use the tools in anything that's gone on in our life and give us more expertise? I mean, look, people that used to hack into computers, they're now used by big companies to turn around and see where their vulnerabilities are. So can we take something and reverse it and say, isn't this more of the gift also?
Absolutely. I always, you know, kind of cringe when people criticize somebody and says they're going through a midlife crisis. It's not a midlife crisis. They're coming to a place where they're realizing their life is moving a different path, and all those lessons that they had before, they're now going to use for another purpose. And everything that brought them to that point was teaching them things about character and wisdom and contribution. And now they want to use that elsewhere. You know, I've known plenty of people that had, you know, maybe they were the CEO and they had this nice salary, and that was what they liked for a while. But then, you know, they reach 50s and they feel like, you know, they want to become a professor. And I was reading just last couple of weeks, I can't remember his name, but he was a man who actually been a professor and wanted to become an attorney. But he was 65 when he went to law school. But once he did that, and he found tremendous fulfillment and still does in that, where a lot of other people are kind of saying retire and sort of slow down. He was saying, but I have a purpose still, and all the lessons he learned, he brought to law school and became very successful and enjoys it tremendously now. So all those things in the past, lessons that we can take and move down a different path even.
I think no matter where you are, if you are in jail, if you're incarcerated, if you were addicted, if you're a housewife, if you're a lawyer, if you're a doctor, a professional, it doesn't matter. If you could just take a piece of paper and list down all of the jobs, in other words, what did you engage in? How did you engage? Were you a volunteer? Like for mine, I could go candy striper, worked at the nursing home, worked at the rehab office, worked in hospice, dental hygienist, naturopath, shaman, medium, psychic medium, radio host, author. You can go on and on and on. But then if you look on the other side of the piece of paper, you could say author, and you could say shared my life story. Radio host, shared and engaged with others. Dental hygienist, connected with intimate parts of a person. You know, naturopath, brought in the natural world. So I think if we are able to do that, we end up saying, isn't this other side so glorious versus the other one that we figured we weren't, oh, we didn't finish or we didn't do. Why couldn't you stay in that profession? People hear that all the time, you know. Or what's wrong? Why do you have to get out of it? It pays your bills, you know, kind of idea. When truly what we're saying is, I want to engage more in the soul. God's guiding me somewhere else to bring more here or there. Isn't that truly more of the God-centered life versus the material outside world?
Absolutely. again, it's just coming from that place where, you know, you say that this is the leading in my heart. This is where I'm supposed to go. And again, there's going to maybe be people that are threatened by that, and you're moving on a different path than maybe your career had been or your education had been. But you just, each of us has to follow where that path is taking us. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, again, she talked about, you know, she wasn't necessarily looking to be somebody that was a counselor to people going through that final stage of life. But in a time of need, she wanted to be a dancer. But people said, but you're so great at comforting people. And she stepped into that role. And she found the fulfillment there, even though it wasn't where she thought maybe her life was going to go. And so, again, it's just each of us, when we come into alignment with that higher purpose, that's where real fulfillment is found. It's not about the titles and the salaries. It's really just experiencing every day how we can contribute and grow, and doing that with authenticity.
What in your thoughts do you counsel many of your people that you work with about how can they have faith when they feel as if they're on ground zero, or how can they move through each day and understand that they still have a life, even though the outside life might be taken away?
I try to share with people, even, you know, in the jail, that they're going to come to the end of that sentence. You know, maybe it's, you know, 6 months, or maybe it's a year, maybe it's longer than that. But I work with a lot of people that are at that final 6 months to a year. And I tell them, at the end of that 6 months to a year, you could have built the most beautiful relationships with your wife or your husband, your children, by phone calls, by letters. You could spend your time in here gaining tremendous wisdom, reading some books from people that have traveled this path and growing. And the challenge, I think, for people, when you talk to them in that type of growth opportunity, they just struggle to believe that's really possible for them. So I think one of the challenges for people is to find somebody maybe who's been where they are, and now they found themselves where that person wants to be, and they can say, you know, that person did it, then that means I can do it, and kind of model the steps that they took, and just recognize that, again, stepping out, when you think that you can't, that's when you must. And it's just begin taking daily action towards the direction you want to go. It's just amazing where things can be in a few weeks when people just begin to believe what's possible and move in that direction.
Let's talk about setbacks for a second, because you, I'm sure, experience those all the time with your people you work with, because you say, well, now they're back in. Something else happened. You know, now they're going to be in for longer, or whatever that might be, in jail or whatever. And a lot of times we say, you know, as you work with people, you say, are you creating a life of illusion or a life of reality? Sometimes a life of illusion is doing the things that you think are going to fulfill you or what you're supposed to do. And like what you said, you know, when they're almost ready to get out, they believe that they set up their life, you know, oh, she's going to go meet me and we're going to have this job and everything's going to be great. And the minute you walk out the door, hey, your gang buddy's standing at the door waiting for you, you know, it's sort of like, what do you do then? You know, so is it an outside job or an inside job?
I think definitely the majority of it's an inside job. I think that our thoughts, you know, our words, they're kind of the seeds that we plant day to day. And just, again, when people are caught up in that cycle of what's impossible or things never work out, and they continue that, you know, 60,000 thoughts a day that it continues to say things like that, it's definitely inside that that's where the change needs to happen, where people mm-hmm. change the language they use, change the words that they use, the things they say to themselves. I just think truly the internal, once that's in alignment, the external just doesn't have the impact that people think that it does. And again, the studies financially are always interesting to me, that there's a reason that they talk about money. Obviously, a lack of money can cause a lot of stress. It's the number one reason for divorce, the fights about money. But financially, when somebody reaches enough money to pay their bills and have a little bit more, anything above that little bit more just doesn't bring more happiness. Everybody is just convinced more of something is going to bring more happiness. But the reality, happiness is what's going to happen when internally, again, we find that love and peace that's there and find that purpose, begin to contribute to others.
Don't you think, in closing, Tobin, that we can surely say, when you find that space for 1 second, realize who's there with you, because it's really a God-given path, and He is who guides us, versus saying, it's my gang member, it's my ex-wife, it's my kids, or it's my bank account. Those are all guiding me to do the right thing. When truly, if you were doing the right thing and trying to do the best you can by, you know, following with God, don't you think that's truly when there may be slip-ups, but they might not be so bad, but they may be slip-ups and they have a lesson, or maybe they are going to be able to say, you know what, it's okay now. You're going to have a break. We're going to be able to allow you to have all of these great things because you're going to be able to be prepared. In other words, God's always preparing us through life for all of these different things. And when we say that, is this the top, the pinnacle, or this is where I'm going to stay, He'll come along and say, but it's a process, dear. It's a process. It's not a position. Don't you think that's what we're really talking about?
I do. That's one of the reasons I chose that title for the chapter there, The Grace is Greater, because each of us have moments of failure. We've had things in our past that we wish hadn't taken place, things we did or things we said we wish we hadn't. And, you know, grace is there to show us we can always begin again, no matter, again, how far off the path we've gotten, how far we've fallen. That's the amazing thing about perfect love, unconditional love from God, is that it's not about anything I can do to earn that love. There's nothing I can do to lose that love. It's just always there. And we come to that place and say, you know what? If the greatest thing in the universe, love, can't be lost, then truly there's nothing to fear.
Right. So I guess in essence, who is driving your bus, going back to the beginning of our conversation, is God is driving your bus. You know, He's going to let you off at each stop and make sure you have some of the tools you need, or make sure that you have lack of the tools you need. And He'll say, I'll pick you up a little bit later, you know, or maybe you can carry Him along in your back pocket. Don't you think sometimes when we say, God has abandoned me? I know I had a time where I said, I think He's on sabbatical. I am sure, because I haven't been hearing Him. And, you know, sometimes it's a silent a nudge, a silent space, a silent time where you're able to say you're walking with or you're walking in an overlay and God is already inside. Don't you think that's where we're going?
Absolutely. I think that sometimes that still small voice becomes even quieter, or like you said,
right,
silent. But it's there for us as a picture for us to recognize, again, that when we come out of that time, that dark night of the soul, we recognize that, you know, He was there all along. It's like the story about Native Americans, that they would take a child out into the woods at night, the transformation where they'd go from a child to a man, and they would be blindfolded. They'd sit on a log, and the challenge for them was to stay there all night long and not leave, not get scared. And so they would do that, and when the child heard the birds in the morning, felt the sun on their face, they could lift the blindfold. And when they did, they would see their father was sitting right there all along, watching them, keeping them safe. I think the same thing is there for us to show us in those moments that we feel like that silence, God is still there watching us, keeping us safe.
Absolutely. Well, Tobin, you do great work, and your book is wonderful. Can you share with the listeners how to find out more information about you? That would be wonderful.
Oh, absolutely. TobinCrenshaw.com is probably the best way. Absolutely. Thank you.
Well, it was such a pleasure to speak with you today. I think sometimes we say we see all of the ways that we might be able to help, but we aren't sure exactly what to do. But many times people say, oh, my son needs this book. My daughter needs this book. Hey, my grandmother needs this book. And I think it's about sharing the word. And really that's what we're talking about, is how can we share the word through experiences. So thank you so much for doing that today.
Oh, thank you very much. It was my pleasure.
Thank you. If you'd like to find out more information about Tobin Crenshaw and his book, The Beautiful Lie, Finding Faith in a World Gone Mad, please do click on the link on the bottom of today's show page for more information. And it truly is about being able to say you are guided, you are cared for, and you are unconditionally loved, irregardless of the space in which you are in, because that space, it just close your eyes and all of a sudden everything else disappears. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. Till tomorrow, have a great day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.